Mr. King, Reel 17. The battalion CO was killed, you said. What was he like?
Oh, he was a really fine, well thought of chap. Hoss Hearn, I call him. That was his name, I think he had his, that was his initials, I don't know. Anyway, he was nicknamed Hoss Hearn. And I understand he'd been killed by machine gun fire, being killed by machine gun fire. And I think the second in command was a bloke called Kaiser, I think. Kaiser or Kaiser, something like that. Who taken over. In fact, I think he got awarded the DSO later on in the war. This bloke had taken over second in command, I think.
And was he respected as
certainly. I think all the officers were very, very well respected. No question about that. I think it's maybe the proof of a regular battalion. I think they maybe did show a lot more respect for their officers than the one that was sort of called up. No active service.
Who was the RSM at this time?
The RSM? No. It was Ricky Wall. He was the chap that we met with him. That I had the run-in with him in Scotland.
Still the same man?
Yeah.
And was he alright?
He was alright. Well, no. No, wait a bit. I think I'm getting mixed up maybe with the RSMs. He was with you all certainly when I went up to Berwick. But the RSM then was Spriggy Bates, I think. He took over, I think, he must have taken over from war. I'm nearly sure it was Spriggy Bates.
And did he perform well in this
action? He was a long-serving member of the Warwicks, of course. I think he went well into the war, he wasn't wounded for quite a long time,
I think you said the message is coming back to you either through radio or runners.
Yeah.
And the communications held out, did they, during the day?
Oh, yes. We had some pretty marvellous. In fact, we had some marvellous. The company runner in our company was a gem. A little tiny fella he was. But, by God, he was a real gem. Because you could send him on out to one of the platoons or out to another company, and unerringly he knew, no question about him not doing the job. He was a real dependable fella, even though we were getting shelled or mortared, off he went, no bother. He didn't seem to be dodging for cover all the time, you know what I mean? He just seemed to say right or say and off he went. And, really marvellous. He's one of the people that more impressed me more, I think.
Do you recall his name?
No, I can't, to be honest. I've bloody awful from him.
Had you any crises or problems on the first day that you recall?
Not really. No, I think it there didn't seem to be any sort of outstanding crises that happened that normally would have expected. No, I think on the first day everything seemed to go down reasonably well, in fact, The thing that struck me, of course, is that we landed exactly where we said we were going to land. I can say this bloody house now, you know, where we landed. In fact, when I went back to France, I went back to France 50 years after, you know, on the anniversary. And we went in exactly the same place, you know, it was really marvellous, like, when we saw it. There was three of us went back, in fact, I've met three lads from Birmingham when we went back. So and it was just, in fact, we went up the Bassey. We went exactly where we'd been on day there and on the second assault on the Bassey. And it was marvellous to think, like, you know, all those years ago we ploughed up the hook and the corn was still there, you know, almost still the grain, you know. It looked exactly as I remembered it, oddly enough, you know, that the Bassey. Square, you know.
So you dug in the first night, and yes. As you say, you set your sentries. Do you recall what happened the second day? Had you reached Labisi by now?
No. The second day, we'd gone up to the wood. We'd gone as far as, or B Company had gone as far as the wood. And not got knocked back. So we dug in around Bayville. And then they started sending patrols out back up the Bassey. And I think that's when B Company had captured one or two Germans then. And we just, I think as far as C Company were concerned, we were dug in round the village. And it was mostly B Company that was sending the patrols out. I don't think we sent any patrols out the first night. I think we were maybe held in reserve, more as a reserve company, because it seemed to be B Company that was doing the patrol work anyway. And of course then, as I say, we did all this changeover with the KSLI and ourselves. And then when we were due to go up the Bassey the second time, that was when we had the 1,000 bomber raid, I remember. We'd been alternating between the KSLI and ourselves. And we were told that we were going to assault Caen, like, you know, Caen again. And that we were going to go through the Bassey again. So, like, the Bassey was on the way as far as we were concerned, the Caen. And I remember we had this 1,000 bomber raid on Caen. And when they came over, I remember we were standing on the edges of the slits, because we were looking, of course. And we must have been forward then. We must have been the forward battalion then. Because when the bombs came over, and they started bombing Caen, and we must have been, what, 3 or 4 miles there, I think. Maybe, way less than that, maybe. And you could feel the shock waves with a blast through your trousers, because everybody was thinking, well, there would be no bloody Germans left after this lot, like, you know, absolutely colossal bombardment, you couldn't believe it. And then the next, that was the night before we were due to go to assault Caen again, and then we had a massive barrage. And we followed the barrage, I remember. We were right behind the barrage of our own artillery. And I remember thinking, you know, all the lads, in fact, I asked our support, I think, why, there can't be any bloody Germans left after this lot. But by God, they were. We really got hammered. C Company really got hammered. as far as the that action was concerned.
Well, when
I remember getting wounded, that's when I was wounded actually. Now whether it was following the barrage, you know, because we were really close to the barrage, whether it was a one that had fallen short and went off, or not, I don't know. But anyway, I got hit in the hand, between the arm and hand. And that was sort of, as far as I, you know, as far as my actions with it were concerned, that was it.
Was this the attack on Labisi Wood?
Yeah, this was the second attack on Labisi.
But you didn't get into the wood, did you, to fight there?
No.
You waited on the way.
I didn't. I was on the roof. Yeah.
How did you first realise you'd been wounded? Did you feel it straight away?
Didn't even know. And I thought, really, yeah, my arm's going queer. Yeah. When I looked down across, I'm already blown. I thought, oh, well, I must have got hit. And I just made my way back to the first aid post, which I thought was, you know, wasn't very far away, actually, just back down the hill. Made me at the first aid post, of course, and before I knew it, I was on a Dakota back to England.
Where was the wound? It was your hand, is it?
I've got wounded right through there. In fact, if you look, if you can see now, those tendons are fastened together. There's two tendons in my arm, in my hand.
Left hand?
In my left hand, fastened together there. They must have fastened them all together there. Of course, oddly enough, I was in hospital for long enough. Really, you know, it was just amazing.
When you went back to the aid post, what was the first thing they did with you?
Oh, well, we just sat around, of course, waiting to be treated. There was no sort of, they were bringing blokes on stretchers first, because I was like walking around. And they were bringing down the, you know, down the blokes up on the stretchers first. And then once we'd got treated there, I was treated at the battalion first aid post first. That was the battalion first aid post. Then we were taken back. I was taken down in a truck, actually. I was just sitting on in a truck.
Was that just a first aid kind of?
Yeah. Like a first aid, you know, a fat one, you know, and that sort of thing, you know, and then sent back down to the field hospital. And in the field hospital, of course, I got a lot more attention then, of course. But they didn't do a great, they didn't seem to do a great deal. I was just sort of all bandaged up. And then, I suppose within a matter of 2 or 3 hours, I suppose, I was on a really plane, a Dakota, back to Radcliffe Infirmary in Oxford. And that was it, as far as, you know, that was the end of my action with the Warwicks, like as far as the Warwicks were concerned, as far as any active service was concerned.
And what was the treatment there in the hospital?
Well, I was in hospital there. I went to Radcliffe Infirmary in Oxford, and I was there maybe 2 or 3 days. In fact, what happened? My wife got notes saying to me that I'd been wounded. And that I was in Radcliffe Infirmary, and when she got down there, I'd been moved up to Glasgow.
Were these
to a hospital in Glasgow?
Were these military hospitals?
Yeah.
Were they regimental places to be in, with regards?
Oh no. Really, really easy going. In fact, the hospital in Glasgow was like a little. It must have been like a little nursing home. It was on the shores of, it was Loch Lomond, you could just say Loch Lomond over the top. And it was very, very easy going, in fact. They just said there wasn't very many men in it. There was just about a dozen sort of recuperating, you know. And I was there, I think I was there maybe about a month. And then I came down to Kattrick, to Malon Barracks in Kattrick, where that was like a rehabilitation centre. And then I was posted back to the 2nd 7th Battalion.
That's Warwick's again, was it?
The Warwick's, yeah, yeah, 2nd 7th Battalion, which was a holding battalion.
Where was this?
No, 2nd 7th Battalion, down Chester, in Round Chester area anyway. And it was a hell of a holding camp. There was a, in fact, I think on first counts, I think there was about 1,500 in this holding battalion. And that's when I sort of acted as RSM. And all we, to be honest, all we did was have a muster parade on a morning and a muster parade at night. And that was it.
Where were the recruits coming from for this battalion?
Oh, mostly from Birmingham. They were nearly all from Birmingham area.
Were the wounded men coming back through?
Yeah, yeah, there was people, constant flow of people coming all from all over the place. Yeah. And I at that time then, I was offered the chance to come out on Class B, because I was a bricklayer, and being married, of course, because I'd been married a few years, then two or three years, I came out and decided to come out.
What date was this?
Bloody say the CEO went berserk when I told him I was coming out. Told me I was a bloody fool, and all. Well, no doubt, if you look at it in retrospect, maybe I was. Because I was just, well, I was just about 24, they said 25, I think. And I'd been acting, I like, you know, it looked the possibility I was going to get promoted anyway again. But anyway, I decided to come out.
And what date was it?
That was May 19. 45.
Just about the time the war ended.
It was just about wrapping up then anyway. It was just about the end of the war anyway.
And this bricklayer was a reserved occupation.
Yeah, it was a reserved occupation, of course, and they were shouting for bricklayers to come out on what they called Class B Reserve. So I came out on Class B Reserve.
Did you have the same kind of demob as the rest of the brothers came?
Oh, yeah. Just
same procedure.
Yeah, I went to Olympia. And in fact, it's funny, when I went to Olympia, he said, well, you know, go in there and you say the tailor, he'll fix you up. Went in and saw the tailor, and he was a bloke from Crook. I've seen him, made people from Crook all over the bloody place. And he used to work in Burton's at Crook, this fella. And I knew him very well, you know, I knew him fairly well. He says, I'll say you're all right, you know, you get a good curse. And I did mine, I got a bloody, you know, I don't know if it was any different to what anybody else got like, but he seemed to think that he was doing me a favour anyway, like, because I remember coming over with his trilby and a bloody overcoat and a suit, that was his pair of shoes, and that was it.
Had you fully recovered from your hand wound then? You weren't graded as a...
Oh, no, no, I was recovered then, yeah, I was fully recovered.
So you didn't get a pension or anything like that for you?
In fact, no. In fact, I was maybe lucky in one sense in that I was called back. I was on leave. And I was called back to... Where the hell was it? Chester, I think it was Chester, anyway. I got a telegram. I was on leave then, and this is before I took Class B release, of course, and got a telegram telling me to report back on such and such a day at this depot. And there'd been a mix-up in the telegram, in the dates, seemingly. Instead of saying maybe the 13th of May, report back on the 13th of May, or the 3rd of May, then the 13th. So I didn't go back to the 13th, I should have been back on the 3rd, or something like that. There was a mix-up on the dates. When I got back, they were going to charge me with bloody desertion for failure to report back in duty. Because they were forming a draft to go to Japan, to go to Singapore, you know, to fight in the Middle East, in the Far East. And anyway, by that time, events had overtaken us, and I'd got this offer of Class B release, so I was taken off the draft. Otherwise, I'd have landed up in pretty Japan somewhere. But it all came, you know, it was proven, like, that it was a genuine mistake, like there had been some mistake with the post office on this, because I kept the telegram, of course. And when I went back, I showed them the telegram, you know, and you know, I thought, sure, that was the end of the story, like that, was it?
Did you get a monetary amount, a sum of money when you finished?
Yeah, I think I got 94 quid when I finished as a
gratuity, kind of.
Gratuity pension, yeah. I think it was £94 I got.
And was there a demob leave in this time?
Oh, yeah,
time?
I think I got 3 weeks or something like that. But I remember getting that, I think it was £94 I got.
And then, of course, you restart your work again.
Oh, yeah, I just restarted work then, you know, yeah. Because everybody was going to work with the military stuff on, you know, the battle dresses and stuff, you know. It's like another army, like, in peacetime.
Do you recall the end of the war itself in Europe? May the 8th, I think it was?
Not a great, no. Oddly enough, I can't recall a great deal about it. I've tried to recall it, mind. I thought, in fact, I can't even tell you where the hell I was. When the war was finalised, which is odd because I have a reasonably good memory, but try as I might, I can't remember where the hell I was on the anniversary of the war.
Looking back on your army life, what were the worst moments?
Oh, I don't know. Well, I think in the worst moments, I think that's at least the things I recollect.
Wait a minute.
I think that one of the worst moments, I don't know if you can call it the worst moments, one I recollect most was the big fighting patrol at Sedgemoor, before Sedgemoor. And of course, I think the worst moment was coming back from Sedgemoor when we had about the count of about 12. I think that was the lowest moment that I can recall as far as the Durans were concerned. I can't recall many worse moments in the Warwicks. Sort of depressing moments. I can't recall a great deal of depressing moments in the Warwicks. I can recall, I think one of the proudest moments was the fact that, I can say that I was there on day there. I think that's one of the things I can proudly say. And I think above all, of course, is the comradeship that you find. Even as sergeant majors, you know, which are normally the not the most admired people. I always seem to get a lot of comradeship. I seem to, you know, still find, even among the lads, you know, I mean, there's that cut, that I still found quite a lot of comradeship. Not just among the sergeants, which you normally sort of worked with, But certainly among the lads, I always seem to have an affinity with lots of the lads anyway, you know. So those are the things that I can recall most, of course. And I think the fact that I seemed to do well in the army, I know I had pretty rapid promotion, but as I say, I always liked the army. I mean, it was a fool to come out, but you know, in retrospect, but certainly, I think all in all, I had a reasonably good role, I think, really, you know.
What was yours and probably your comrades' response towards medals and the awards of medals? Because obviously some got them and others.
Lots of lads used to say where they come up with the naffy, you know, stuff, you know. I think there's a lot of cynicism about the way they handed out. Because there's no doubt about it. There's lots of lads who never get medals. That little blood that we had in the company runner. My God, if anybody deserved a medal, he did. And I don't suppose he was ever mentioned, you know, in anything. So I think there's a lot of, I think it depends on who says it at any given time, you know. I mean, I think everybody's heroic at times, no doubt about that. Even the lad that just stands his ground when he's going to shelter hell or something like that, you know, I mean, they're as heroic as anybody else. As I say, there seems a lot of cynicism about how medals are dished out, you know. I think lots of them are given out for propaganda purposes, to be honest. At least that was the impression that we used to get sometimes during the war, where you've got a bloke that was maybe a bit more photogenic than others, that he maybe got a medal and others didn't. So as I say, broadly speaking, though, I think there was a lot of cynicism about how medals were given out, in fact.
Are there occasions, particularly in the years after following the war, and I don't know if it's the same now, that there are, what, nightmare, or do moments still come back to you in your sleep, or your...
No, not really. Mind, I always seem to be in the army, only to, you know, I'm always doing stuff connected with the army, like, but I don't have any horrific sort of experiences, nightmares and that, but... I do get a lot of dreams, oddly enough, about army life, you know, I mean, it's just something that goes all over the day.
Have you kept contact through any of the Corps comrades?
I'm in the, I was in the Durham sort of comrades, but for some reason, I think, it was to do with the 2nd Battalion of the Durhams. I once applied to go to their reunion and was refused permission to go. Although I wasn't in the 2nd Battalion, but they had a reunion, which I mistook for a reunion of the Durhams, you know, the Durham Association, like Military Association. So I sort of wasn't too keen on applying that. But I've been a member of the Royal Warwickshire Association, and I've attended reunions there. Not very many, mind, just two. I went back to France on D-Day with the Warwicks, which was very good. In fact, a bloke right out of the blue put me up overnight, and I'd never even met him before, you know. And he was a private, actually, in another company, in B Company, as it happened. And he put me up without any hesitation when he knew I was coming. So, you know, this... those are the good points that I remember. But certainly I'm still interested in anything to do with the army, yes.